Dakota has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Greetings, everybody. How is it going today? This is Tyler Dunn with the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel alongside my partner, Robert T. McGinn. Actually, I don't know what your middle name is, Bob.
C.
C. Robert C. McGinn. How are we doing?
Good, Tyler. Right. Good. Glad to be here. You and Tom Silverstein and Laurie have had a wild week, and I've been kind of doing the normal things.
Hey, it's been pretty crazy. I mean, geez, from the game to the red-eye flight back, all of a sudden, New Orleans State's right around the corner here.
Yep. So
we got to jump right into this game, Bob. I mean,
let's review the week, Tyler.
Let's review it. Okay, so everybody saw what happened. The world saw what happened. I guess we'll start from point A. How did Green Bay put themselves in this position against the Seattle Seahawks when you look back at the film?
Well, their offense was a horrendous game plan by Mike McCarthy. Almost arrogantly, he decided to just go spread and try to throw the ball, despite the crowd and despite a hell of a heck of a defense. And he went nowhere. And they got behind. They gave up. Tremont Williams gave up a bomb. So it was 7-0 against a rookie quarterback.
Okay, so the offense is struggling. Have you ever seen the offensive line cave that bad since, I guess it would be, what, 09 at the start of the year?
Yeah, with Alan Barber at right tackle. Yeah, I have many times I've seen it cave.
Yeah,
back before you were born.
Who am I talking to?
Yeah, many times. But this, for the most recent era, this would be the worst.
Okay, but why did he spread it out? And I think he said that Seattle challenged them to throw the ball as opposed to the first two games when teams dared him to run the ball. But, I mean, 8 sacks, Cedric Benson has 2 carries, you have 0 points. With all these weapons, something's not right there. What took him so long to adjust?
I guess it's hard to adjust on the fly without a halftime, you know?
Mm-hmm,
true. You got your play sheet, and McCarthy's involved in this game. It's hard to make a big, drastic move until they get inside and Clements and Campen say, Mike, or whatever, we got to run the ball.
Yeah.
You know?
So they make the adjustment. They start moving the ball, and I think that's how they have to move the ball right now, these 10, 11, 12-play drives, because the offense, the passing game, just in a funk. So they started getting something going by feeding Benson early on in the second half, but then still the game boils down to the pass heard around the world.
It certainly did. So how do you want to get into this one? Now, you've covered this. Now, when I got back from that red eye from Seattle, Tyler, I had to go into the tape on Tuesday, spent, you know, whatever, 12 hours doing that. Wednesday, I was all Saints, so I haven't covered this. It's been you, Tom, and Laurie, so you're going to have to handle this.
Yeah. I think it's interesting. I mean, We're sitting up there in the press box, and, you know, our newspaper deadlines are kind of closing fast there. A little bit. So we're standing there, and obviously we know the Hail Mary's coming. Everybody knows this is the last play of the game. You see the catch, you see the reaction, and what's going through your head?
Well, I had no idea what happened live. Did you? I mean,
no.
Something happened in the corner. We're way on the other end zone. We had no clue.
I mean, I'm thinking so. Playoffs, Hakeem Nicks, Giants, Russell Wilson's the hero, Wisconsin bat. You know, that kind of a storyline. We had no idea initially just how controversial it was.
And the first 3 plays by the Seahawks were kind of pathetic.
Mm-hmm.
And you got Russell Wilson, who, I mean, come on, he's not an accomplished passer at this level. So they just had no chance. They got no wide receiver on that team. Sidney Rice has pretty much lost it.
Yeah.
Golden Tate can't really run. He's a running back, sir. But I mean, they don't have any weapon.
You just see just this sea of white bodies in the corner of the end zone. So, all right, so this happens, and we watched the replay a few times, and I kind of kind of got the sense that something wasn't right, that this was a close call. Yeah. The Packers seemed unhappy, but then, you know, me and Tom, we head down to the locker room. You were up there in the press box, right?
Right.
And we both saw some pretty interesting things. I know when we were down there.
So what did you see when you got downstairs? Because of our deadlines, I never made it downstairs.
So me and Tom were standing by the tunnel, and which was really near the Packers visiting locker room. And it was kind of weird because there's some people standing around, but nobody really knew where the team was. And all of a sudden, out of nowhere, MD Jennings shows up. He runs into the tunnel. He's frantically searching for something. You figure out he's looking for his helmet. He can't find his helmet. So he's digging through like two different bins, picks up a helmet, puts it on, finally finds his helmet, sprints back onto the field, which turned out to be the extra point.
Yeah.
And then, you know, me and Tom kind of ambled out there onto the field in the corner of the end zone. And you could just see the players, you know, the guys running back off into the locker room. And at that point, Bob, what did you see?
Well, there were monitors all throughout the press box, of course. We were in the first row. You and Tom had taken off, and I was going to have to sit there. Mike Hunt was still there, and I was going to have to start writing. But so I looked to my left, and up on the second row was all the Packers, Mark Murphy, Ted Thompson. I saw John Dorsey over there, Jason Wallers and his PR staff. Tim Connolly, a marketing guy, Russ Ball was up there, and they were all looking, they were getting ready to leave, but they were looking, they were all standing, and they were looking at these monitors. So I went up there closer to them, and at that point then, it was under, the review had come through, and the review by Howard Slavin, the NFL full-time replay official, he said it was okay. I mean, and then Elliot, the ref, said game over, whatever. So the NFL Observer up there, there was two guys, Joe Ryan and Mike Kensel, the NFL office. And these are, I think they're both part-time. And they were seated about two seats down from Mark Murphy. And Mark Murphy went over there to talk to him and just to see, you know, if this thing was reviewable. And as it turned out, it was reviewable because that play was in the end zone, not out in the field. So the replay official could have overturned that thing. Howard Slavin, the replay official, is about 30 yards to our left, down in private boxes. There's visiting coaches' box, home coaches' boxes, TV booths, and one for replay, and that's where he was. And Murphy wanted an explanation from Kensel. Kensel just said, hey, these are not replacement people in that booth. Howard Slavin's full-time. And then the Packers put their coats on and headed to the locker room, and they were not happy, and they were Tim Connolly made a remark. I mean, it kind of summarized, I think, what everybody on that row of front office was thinking. I mean, they were burned, and they thought they had gotten screwed.
This is a kid's program, but what was that remark, Bob? Can we say that on the air?
No, I don't think we'll repeat that right now, but nobody was happy about it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that was the scene we had down there in the locker room. It was pretty remarkable. As the players were really talking to reporters early on, I was talking to Cedric Benson and just asked him about this final play. You know, have you ever seen anything quite like that? And, you know, he was pretty calm, pretty reserved. He's like, no, you know, I hadn't seen anything like that in my history of playing, you know, where you lose a game on the last play. Didn't really realize exactly how controversial it was at the moment. Some players did, some players didn't. And throughout that 10-15 minute period, guys kept peeking up to the TV monitors. There's two of them on this side of the locker room where I was. And eventually the highlights started rolling. And you have two groups of people, two groups of players at these TV monitors, some of the linemen at one end, some of the skill position players at the other end. And with each blown call or each questionable call, the reaction just kept picking up a little bit more and a little bit more. They showed Eric Walden's roughing the passer, and I think it was Ryan Taylor who just couldn't believe it. He said, what's the penalty? Is it roughing the passer? And then they showed Sam Shields' defensive pass interference. That got a huge reaction. And then when they showed Golden Tate's reception, Bob, I mean, it was mayhem. Guys started screaming, started swearing. They were laughing, that kind of laugh where you don't necessarily know which human emotion is going to come out of your system there. And it was pretty unbelievable. I mean, Aaron Rodgers turned around in disbelief, just kind of this look of horror on his face like he saw a ghost and just screamed, awful, like three times in a row. Hmm. It was pretty wild. I mean, they were just in disbelief in the moment. You know, they see it right then and just know exactly the magnitude of it at that time. And you know what? I think we're going to get into the play here a little bit more. You'll probably have an interesting take on it as well. I think they had a reason. and to be this upset. I mean, obviously it carried in into Twitter. It carried into newspaper stories. TJ Lang said he wanted to make a statement with his tweets, and he did. I mean, he went on there and became one of the most retweeted tweets of all time, slamming the refs, slamming the NFL. To me, and I think to really the mess. Oh, you're giving me the finger here. And to most people that see this play, MD Jennings picked off Russell Wilson. End of story. Case closed.
All right,
the Packers lost the game because of the officials.
All right. So there's just been a hysteria, a groundswell about this play being called improperly, right?
Correct.
All right. But I forget all this hysteria. I mean, I don't even pay any attention to this. I mean, that doesn't, none of that
hysteria
means anything.
Hysteria is fun, Bob.
Well, it may be fun,
hysteria,
but
it's a lot of fun.
I know. I try not to deal in a whole lot of that, you know?
Oh, you just seem like Mr. Hysteria to me. Jeez.
All right. So let's just cut to the chase.
All right.
Let me just mention this, and I said it to coming back on the flight the other night. All right. And this is going to sound ridiculous, but I'll mention it anyway, okay? For about 10 or 12 years, I coached youth baseball. And the last four, I was coaching 14 and 15-year-old boys in De Pere.
I bet you ran those kids into the ground, didn't you?
I did. That's true. I did. And
Bobby
Knight,
they call
him. So I was coach third. And this was on a full-size high school field. And this happened, I don't know, many times, two or three times a year when there would be a play at third. And I'd be about as close as, was it Lance Easley was? 5 yards away. I'd sneak into maybe 3 yards away. And you're right on top of that play. And you're watching two things, the base and a foot coming in, right? And it's just like, you know, you're so close. And those fans are 40 yards away. And maybe the ump is 10, 12 yards away because it's a two-man umpiring crew.
Right.
And you know exactly what that call is. I mean, you are on top of the base. And it's like you're the closest person other than the third baseman and the guy sliding. And you see this thing. And you know dead right what happened. And nobody else does. All these fans, if there was instant replay, it cannot replace that eye.
Right.
All right, so Easley, how close is he to that play? Is that the guy's name?
Right.
All right. So he kind of sneaks in. Maybe he's 5-4 yards away. All right. What he saw is better than any camera. There was no replay until, what, 10 years ago or five? So what I'm just saying what he saw is better than any participant. It's better than any camera. It's better than Howard slaving up in that booth. Now, the league did what it could in terms of looking at, before their statement, they looked at all the angles and all that, but it's not as good as the naked eye. And the guy had a pretty good angle. Now, okay, simultaneous catch. What percent, we talked about this on the plane, mm-hmm. What percent of the catch do you give Tate?
Tate?
Yeah.
Ah, geez. 13.2%.
All right. I was going to give him 20% from what I could see. Is that enough to be a simultaneous catch? I don't know.
No. Nah, 20.
Does it have to be 100%? Isn't it 50-50? He's got to get to 50?
Yeah, right.
But there can be a difference in that guy who saw it. If he says it's 50 and we say it's 20 and 13.
To me, when you see the play, it's MD Jennings has the ball and Golden Tate is just a starved hyena trying to stick his arm in there and provide the illusion that, hey, I have this as well, when he never was able to really accomplish that. That's what it seems like to me. And I just think that the officials, you believe what you want to believe, you see what you want to see. It's almost like they saw this reception coming. They tracked the ball, they tracked Golden Tate, and it's a bang-bang thing. I know they had a great view of it, but to me, it's kind of like they anticipated that call, in a way.
Maybe, and this guy's not a good official.
And that's and right, and at that
we
point...
We know that.
He's right. Not a good official, and look, bad calls are going to be made. They're made with the best refs in the country, but there's always a voice, somebody that will step up, make the tough call, and overrule somebody. Nobody did that here. Nobody else that saw the play, nobody upstairs, and I just think that play is indicative of these 3 weeks of replacement officials. They've been hesitant. They've been afraid. They don't want to make the tough call, and they lost control. And this was just the breaking point, absolute breaking point of refs being afraid to make a tough call. Because look, I mean, there was a player in the locker room during all that pandemonium there. I'm not going to say his name. A player just shouted, you know, they bleep and messed up, and they're afraid that 70,000 people are going to kill them on their way out, or 80,000 people. And he kind of nailed it on the head. I mean, are they really going to reverse that call?
Well, I don't think Slavin is, because it's too close. And again, this whole thing about looking at a camera, at an angle, at a tape, it's not as good as that naked eye. And he went with the guy down there. I mean, it's pretty close. I mean, you know, no matter what.
You think it's
close?
I mean,
we're talking to Packer fans, millions of Packer fans, and they say it's not close. But again, that's hysteria. You got to look at this as detached as you can. And that's how I try to look at everything involving the team I cover. I'm just an unbiased observer, just looking at these things from a detached lens.
I totally agree with your approach to it, but I feel like this hysteria has been unprecedented hysteria, and it goes beyond the cheeseheads. I do, Bob. It's been nationwide, and look, the regular refs are coming back. So do you think that was a coincidence?
No, I do not.
Okay.
No, and I think TJ Lang and Mr. Sitton had a lot to do with getting those negotiations going. More power to them. Let's get the games real. Let's get them right. These guys were in over their heads. The owners are most at fault. These money-hungry guys, these greedy people from Jerry Jones on down, they just thought they could break the union.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been union breaking going on all over this country since... That's the air traffic controllers.
Don't bring your politics into the spot.
So, I mean, that's what they tried to do there. And this call and Sitton and Lang's tweets stopped it from happening.
I totally agree. I mean, that's what TJ Lang said he wanted to accomplish, is they got on the team bus and a few of the players talked and they said, we got to do something, because if we don't do anything, this is just going to continue. So he said, you know what? He in the back of his mind, he knew that he could get fined over those tweets. I mean, we've both talked to TJ Lang. He's one of the smartest, most astute, cerebral guys in the locker room. I mean, people that see those tweets might think, oh, he just went off the deep end, he's crazy. That's not the case at all. He knew exactly what he was doing. It had a purpose, and I think he accomplished that. The regular refs are coming back, regardless of whatever Roger Goodell says. I know he kind of dismissed the notion on Thursday that Monday night was the trigger that put everything in motion. It really was.
Okay. All right, and no matter what TJ and Sitton, no matter what they tweet, they still didn't have their eyes right next like that guy did, the scab official. I know Packer fans are going to say, if they miss the playoffs by a game, or if they don't get home field and they eventually lose on the road or something like that, this is going to keep coming back and back and back, that they didn't lose the game. Well, what did Mike McCarthy say the other day? He basically said, life's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
He said, stuff happens. There's all kinds of things. All right, why did this play occur, Tyler? When you look at that tape, Dom Capers rushed 3. All right, now he's playing percentages. You can argue that he should have rushed 6.
You're talking about this play specifically in the game.
Before the ball is thrown, he rushed 3 on the last 6 plays on that drive, all 6 plays in that final drive. At other times in his career, say let's go back to Pittsburgh in the Super Bowl, he rushed 5. He rushed 3 the first play. Zombo missed a tackle on that first down, and then the last 3 or 4 plays he rushed 5. He said he'd go down fighting like that. All right, on this play he rushes 3.
Why do you think he didn't go down fighting here?
Well, he dropped 8, and he was competing against Russell Wilson, not Roethlisberger. Mm-hmm. I mean, Wilson's not an accomplished passer, you know, and he figured, well, let the guy do whatever he's got to do, and he's not going to be able to fit it in. They got no receivers. They don't have Mike Wallace running down there and Hines Ward to find a window. You can argue this. I mean, I don't know. There is no right answer. There really isn't.
Yeah.
The play failed, so I guess you could say Capers failed. But what happened on that? Clay Matthews blew contain. I mean, he got sucked inside, and when he made a slight move inside, he got double-teamed and shoved inside. All Russell Wilson wanted was for his people to get into the end zone, run around, find a position, and he threw that ball after 6.5 seconds. All right, so now Clay Matthews then spins out of it, recovers, realizes he's blown the contain, and he goes and hits Wilson frontally when the ball's released. He could have got penalized there, Tyler. Yeah. You saw that.
Right.
I was amazed he didn't. If they hit Eric Walden half an hour before on that ridiculous low tackle, Walden doesn't know if Wilson's going to run or throw there. He's just tackling the guy, and he gets nailed for roughing the quarterback.
Yeah, Matthews more violent than Walden's, I thought.
So the play, if you had to find fault on that play, you find fault with Clay Matthews twice, really.
Man, nobody's talking about that.
No, there's so much other stuff to talk about. But It's not part of the hysteria, the frenzy.
All right, well, I appreciate that take. Now, what people are talking about with that play, MD Jennings, do you catch it? Do you bat it down? You've seen a lot of these Hail Marys over the years. Now, we talked to MD Jennings in the locker room, and he was asked about that. He said that they're told to do both, to judge it by the situation. Of course, one day earlier, I believe it was the Lions-Titans game with Titus Young. I mean, a guy can bat it, and somebody can swoop in for the catch. We've seen that happen. He thought he could make a clean catch. He did make a clean catch. Right, Bob?
I'll give him 80%.
All right.
Okay?
I'll give.
And one thing we forgot is the pass interference.
Okay. Well, let's stick with this play for now. So,
I mean, the pass interference on the play.
Oh, on the play. Oh, yeah.
There's no question. Mr. Easley could have thrown the flag there.
He wasn't watching that.
No, he
was tracking the ball.
Hey, that's that's all he could do. And generally speaking, there's no pass interference call on Hail Marys. But it should have been there. That was blatant. There's no question.
Unless, you're right, exactly. So if you're MD Jennings, do you catch it? Do you bat it down? That's a tough call. I know it's really easy to say, why didn't you just bat it down? But it's been caught off the tip before. He doesn't regret his decision. He said he would do the same exact thing again.
There's no room for him to bat it down. And if he tries to bat it down, it might go off Woodson's shoulder right to, 81.
I think he did the right thing.
Yeah,
I do too.
Yeah, yep. I can't fault the guy. That was the best play he ever made. He vaulted. He was at the height of the ball.
Right.
He got both arms on it. He did what he could to haul it in, and he got 80% of the ball.
How would you like to be MD Jennings, by the way? You go to a high school in a little town in Mississippi, 47 kids in your graduating class.
Wow.
You play at Arkansas State. Nobody knows who you are. You go undrafted. You stick around Green Bay on the 53 somehow. You had a chance to start this year, but you end up on the field in – and become the most well-known, most talked-about athlete of the week. Yeah. I mean, he told me he never shuts his phone off. Monday night and Tuesday night, he just shut his phone off and put it aside. He just couldn't handle it anymore. I can't blame the guy. He's not one that seeks attention. Really quiet, really soft-spoken guy.
Good guy.
So,
yeah.
kind of a strange week for him too. But all right, Bob, they have to move forward somehow.
And so do we.
And so do we. I think we've talked about this. Let's see. 22 minutes. Let's move on. All right. They have a game Sunday, I'm told. You've done your weekly scouting report on these New Orleans Saints. How in the hell is this team 0-3?
They're pretty bad on defense. They miss Greg Williams. Spagnuolo's come in with a whole new system. Even when they won the Super Bowl in 2009, they didn't have a great defense. They didn't have great personnel.
No.
Williams is a gambler. He's like somewhat of a
cheat.
I wouldn't call him a con man, but he's
an
extreme motivator. He gets players to do exactly what he wants, and he coaches ferocious football, and that's how they won. And they took the ball away that year. Since then, they've had a bunch of first-round picks here on defense. None of them have really panned out. And so they're just – Spagnuolo doesn't have much personnel.
Right.
And this is a game, Green Bay, and they're tackling poorly. So this is a game Green Bay could definitely explode on offense.
Yeah. I mean, Greg Williams, his scheme did cover up for just bad personnel. Not a lot of talent on those teams. They took a lot of chances, forced a lot of turnovers. And that was coming in, Steve Spagnuolo said he didn't want to blitz nearly as much as Greg Williams. So you wonder, all right, well, what's your forte going to be? Who are you going to lean on? You got the roster here in front of you.
His best pass rusher has been Junior Gallette. He plays left end on passing downs. I mean, he looked pretty good against the Chiefs. He's not a bad rusher, but come on, it's nothing like the rushers the Packers have seen for 3 weeks.
I mean,
nothing.
And like the one veteran on their defense, Roman Harper, I mean, he was torched at Lambeau Field last year. He's going to be on the field. You have to think that Aaron Rodgers is going to find out where he is and try to exploit that mismatch.
With probably Mr. Finley on that one,
you would think. You would think.
The cornerbacks, Jabari Greer's kind of a 5'9", 30-year-old guy. I mean, he's a little feisty, but, I mean, he really can't cover somebody if Rodgers has time. Patrick Robinson's a first-year starter. He's okay. The nickelback is a real problem. In the slot is Corey White, fifth-round pick from Samford down in Florida. I mean, he's really vulnerable, so... If Spagnuolo doesn't blitz, and if he doesn't get good pressure, I mean, he's got Junior Gallette and a good veteran defensive end, Will Smith, but beyond that, he really has nothing. It could be a shooting gallery thing all over again.
It could be, and that's what everybody wants to see. That's what we saw in the opener. last season.
Are they ready to get into that shooting gallery mode, Tyler?
I don't know, Bob. I mean, we're three games in here. I think Aaron Rodgers is on pace for, it's just a small sample space, so what, 16 touchdowns, 14 picks. He had 45 and 6 a year ago. Something's not right with the passing game. And I think that this loss in Seattle just kind of goes to show that it's more than what defenses are doing to Green Bay. I mean, Seattle, Mike McCarthy said himself, they challenged Green Bay to throw the football. That was different than the first two games, and they weren't able to do it. Like you mentioned earlier, they were a little bit stubborn with it. They kept spreading it out. They couldn't handle the pressure. Now, New Orleans is not going to get after the quarterback nearly as well as Seattle. So that's in Aaron Rodgers and this offense's favor big time. So I do think that they're going to still try to throw the ball a lot, Bob, but my gosh, if that doesn't work again, you have to give the ball to Cedric Benson.
One thing about the Saints, I mean, I don't see any way they can get pressure either, Tyler. But they are a desperate team. Mm-hmm. They're more desperate than Green Bay. Don't forget that. Mm-hmm. And these guys are used to winning. They've won probably more than the Packers the last 3-4 years. I mean, they are desperate.
They
got nothing to lose, and Spagnuolo is going to do some stuff in this game. And if he gets pressured, then you know something really is a problem with the Packer offense and their line and their protection scheme.
I can't see this being a blowout. I mean, the Saints have been in every game pretty much this year.
Yeah.
And it's just been the defense that's been terrible. I mean, Drew Brees is still moving the ball up and down the field. And I think they do miss Sean Payton. I mean,
probably a lot.
They miss him a lot. So, I don't know. I know Green Bay statistically, their defense is off to a really good start, but I think Drew Brees is going to go down fighting. I think this is going to be a high-scoring game both ways.
Let's look at the Saints offense. You know, they got a lot of protection problems of their own. They got, when they won the Super Bowl, they had John Stinchcomb at right tackle. Who's he? Not a bad player. Now they got the guy who was their sixth offensive lineman those years, Zach Strief, a kid from Northwestern, seventh-year guy. Massive, 6'7", 330. You know, he's got a good set. He's got a good punch. Technically, he's really sound, but he just doesn't have the feet and the flexibility. He'll be up against Walden and Perry. He got killed by Justin Houston of Kansas City Sunday, so there could be all kinds of pressure. On the other side, Jermon Bushrod, he's really just an average left tackle. Mm-hmm. He's going to have his hands full with Matthews, so there's going to be all kinds of pressure on Breeze. When you look at Breeze's weapons, not so good. I mean, they've declined.
You think so?
They got Jimmy Graham. Okay, he's their number one guy. And you got Sproles, who's going to be on third down. But the wideouts, they're not playing well. Marcus Colson's playing on a bad foot. He's got a plantar problem there. He's really running. Looks like he's running like a tight end, mm-hmm. Probably running 4.75. Lance Moore's kind of a crafty possession guy. And Devery Henderson is what he has been for 8 years. He's a vertical threat, but he's not skilled or polished or anything. So sometimes Breeze, in addition to having people around him threatening him, he doesn't have a whole lot of people downfield open.
So if you're Green Bay, you prioritize Jimmy Graham and you prioritize Darren Sproles.
Boy, I think so.
Mike McCarthy said himself, like in how they were trying to use Randall Cobb, mm-hmm. they looked at Sproles. I mean, he's still, like you, I think you tweeted out the other day, I mean, it's early in the season, but he's on pace for another record-setting total yardage season. Yep. So he's still a go-to weapon for them.
So I don't know. That's D.J. Smith's going to be the matchup. In the opener last year, it was D.J. Hawk who was the dime backer.
Right.
And he got undressed by Sproles twice, and then he kind of lost that role. Bishop had it pretty much the rest of the year. Now it's D.J. Smith. It's a tough, tough, tough matchup. Capers going to have to scheme. He can't just play man there.
Yeah. And let's flip to the other side of the ball. We have to talk about Green Bay's offensive line.
Yeah.
You know, you watch the tape. And a part of it is Rodgers hanging on to the ball a little too long. Part of it is Seattle's cornerbacks had a really good game. I mean, Green Bay's receivers just could not get separation. But it still comes down to the offensive line, and that was just an awful, awful first half.
Guys getting beat inside, Tyler. You've got to take, if you're a tackle, you've got to take the inside away. And Newhouse and Balaga just, you know, didn't even get a glove on their guy, basically, and those were just flat sacks. Yeah, Brian Blaga, he admitted his worst game since his rookie year. Rodgers, I got him for 2.5 of the 8 sacks. I mean, he slipped once, and people on the outside not really getting much separation against, you know, Tall, Sherman and Brown are tall. in coverage, physical cornerbacks.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what about Bruce Irvin, too? And we talked about him last week on the podcast, and that was kind of a highly discussed, controversial draft pick, but he embarrassed Brian Bulaga. And Bulaga, well, he gave up 1.5 sacks all of last season. He gets him for 2 in the first quarter.
I had him for more than that on Bulaga, but yeah, the point is well taken. He,
yeah,
6 pressures in this game for Bulaga. I had, you know, he's playing on a bad knee. That's probably a factor. Boy, and they got no depth. They just have to have him play better, and he will.
So, what kind of game should we expect here? Is this going to be high scoring, 2 desperate teams? Or what kind of tempo, what kind of game are you expecting Sunday?
Tyler, the only way I see the Saints really winning, and it's a stretch, is running the ball. I mean, that's how the Niners and the Seahawks, tainted as it might be, that's how they won those games, really, with the run game. Pierre Thomas.
Hey, don't feed the hysteria, Bob.
Exactly.
Jeez, that's all you do anymore.
Pierre Thomas, tough guy. I mean, he's a little bit of a poor man's Marshawn Lynch. I love Pierre Thomas. He's a great guy on screens. I mean, he ran a screen pass in the Super Bowl against the Colts. I mean, he probably still running. He ran through half their defense. He is an extremely hard guy to bring down. Came from the University of Illinois. Sproles, we discussed him. And Mark Ingram.
Everybody forgets about Mark Ingram.
They traded up to the 28th pick in 2011, ahead of the Packers. He was definitely on the Packers board. Would have been a key consideration for him over Derek Sherrod, right?
Mm-hmm.
And Ingram is playing about 12 snaps a game, and he hasn't really wowed anybody. So he plays some.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, they have all these. They have Chris Ivory too. A lot of backs. But would the Saints really look to the ground here? I mean,
they're desperate, and the pass isn't working. This 50 times a game stuff. That's their only way to win. I don't think their head coach is an O-line running game coordinator, Aaron Cromer. They got a guard, Jahri Evans, who runs block as good as anybody in the league. The center's weak, but the other guard, Ben Grubbs, has made the Pro Bowl.
Lost Knicks.
And their tackle, right. And their tackle, Streif and Bushrod. I mean, they run block better than they pass block. I'm just saying Green Bay, they're front and they're at home. They should be able to take care of business against this running game. But they got to be aware that that might be the way the Saints play it.
And we've been in the locker room for a few days now, and I'm just trying to get a gauge at this team's head. I mean, have they moved on?
What do you think? I mean, McCarthy's certainly trying. He started talking about it right away.
Right. I mean, and Wednesday morning, Mike McCarthy and Charles Woodson both spoke to the team. Woodson brought up the Tuck Rule game from when he was with Oakland. And just, look, that ended their season, he told him. And he said, as controversial as that play was, the Raiders put themselves in that position. He said, look, they put themselves in that position against Seattle, like we just talked about. They did not play a great game to get to that point. So that's the mindset they're trying to build here, that stop pointing the finger, stop blaming the officials, even though literally everybody else in the country is telling these players, you got screwed, you got hosed, you guys should have won that game. I mean, that's what they're hearing constantly. You have to somehow fight that and take some accountability, take some responsibility. Yeah. It's easier said than done. I mean, I think this loss can linger over them for a while, and it's going to be tough to get over.
Wow, you really think so, huh?
I think so. I mean, I think they're going to be competitive all year and compete for a playoff spot, but, I mean, geez, just the way they lost and just that can kind of haunt you to an extent. I don't know if it's going to have a huge impact on the season, but I don't think I don't think you can just brush it aside and forget about it.
You're probably right. I tend to do that, and I guess I'm thinking too clinically on something like that.
Yeah.
You're thinking more of the human and the emotion of it. I mean, you just got done playing your career. I mean, not that many years ago, you know, in college and everything. And I hear you. Yeah, I mean, the loss is going to hurt. That's 2 losses, you know, just from a purely academic standpoint. But you think it's going to be kind of tough 6 days later to really play out, huh?
It seems like they got the right coach. He doesn't get too high. He doesn't get too low. I think if you had a coach who's very emotional and just kind of leads the team that way, like a Jim Harbaugh or a Bill Cowher, somebody who's in your face every day, I think that would be a lot more risky, because the highs are really high, the lows are really low. The way that McCarthy kind of dealt with this game was probably the right way. I mean, he didn't, you know, he was honest, and he didn't deflect all the questions about it. I mean, he answered everything pretty up front, but they're not dwelling on it. They had this meeting as a team. They tried to make it clear. Don't blame the officials. Let's blame ourselves and move forward. So behind the scenes, I think they did everything right. But, I mean, still, I mean, this is a game. Emotions are going to run high, and they're going to remember this.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the past two Super Bowl champions, the Packers and the Giants. They barely sneak into the playoffs on a DeSean Jackson punt return. That guy, Green Bay, and the Giants were 9-7. Once they get in, the Packers, well, we talked about this at the airport. I mean, Desmond Bishop makes a shoestring tackle in the wild card game to keep the Packers in it. Kyle Williams fumbles twice to get sent to the Giants to the Super Bowl. And this is a game of inches. Mm-hmm. It's always a game of inches. And the players know that. They know that this game was taken away from them. And in this game of inches, that can come back to bite you.
Yep. Well said. Well said. All right. Well, should we wrap it up, Tyler?
Let's wrap it up. I think so. Good time. Well, hey, thanks a lot for listening, everybody.
Thank you very much, and we'll see you again next time.
And be sure to check out our coverage at jsonline.com. You can shoot us an email anytime, bmcginn@jrn.com or tdunn@jrn.com. Thanks a lot for listening.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit RightRug.com. RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.